The Off the Ball Podcast Network. Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
Okay, I'm delighted to say we've got Gregor Paul of the New Zealand Herald with us here. He's been on the show many a time, but it's great to finally meet you, Gregor.
Good to be here.
How have you enjoyed World Cup 2019?
Well, they've been pretty good so far. We've probably lacked a couple of killer games. We've had a couple, one being Japan against Ireland and the other one being Japan against Scotland. And I thought New Zealand's game against South Africa was excellent. There's been maybe a lack of quality rugby in between those games. Australia-Wales was quite good. But look, I think Japan's done an outstanding job in terms of hosting it, getting people into the stadiums. Atmospheres have been great, and I guess no one's been particularly helped by the refereeing edict, which isn't really helping make a spectacle of things, is it?
No, it's been controversial for sure. It's been a talking point. It's something that I tried to ask Joe Schmidt about in the aftermath of Bundiaki's red card at the weekend. Understandably, he didn't want to comment because he wants to get him off. What do you think? Do you think that the overall ruling is wrong? Do you think individual referees are to blame?
I think the ruling is the problem, isn't it? The referees are really doing what they've been told.
Yeah.
And, you know, as Joe has said, and Steve Hansen said it when two All Blacks were yellow carded, like that's you're going to get carded if you hit the head. And it doesn't really matter what the circumstances are at the moment. If the head gets hit, you know it's going to be a card. And then you're really just hoping that there's going to be some kind of acceptance that it wasn't your fault.
Yeah.
And that it's going to come yellow rather than red. But we've seen a few red. I'm thinking that we're probably going to see a red at some stage in the quarterfinals, and one game will be turned on that.
Do you give any hope at all for Bundiaki and the legal team behind him that he might be able to play, let's just say, some part in the tournament if the impossible happens this weekend and Ireland manage to beat the All Blacks?
Well, look, I think everyone's making a big deal about Bundy, but there's plenty of other players that have been red carded out of the tournament, and it's going to happen again. So now, look, the rules have been clear, and we can disagree with whether that's right or wrong, but they're clear at the moment, and he a three-week ban, he should probably be feeling, I know it's pretty hard for him to accept that he's not going to be part of the World Cup, but it's better than 6 weeks, which is what the entry point is. So, like, now there's no way is that going to be changed.
In terms of the other things you were saying there, in terms of it being perhaps a poor tournament outside of the cracking games, it's a lull that the tournament seems to go through. Almost every tournament, it kind of feels like 4 years ago as well. There's nothing really they can do about this because you've got your big eight or nine teams and then the rest, and naturally that is why we have a lull in the tournament.
Yeah, look, I think the Pacific Island teams have been a wee bit disappointing. Fiji had their moments, maybe they were a wee bit hard done by in that game against Australia, and that might have changed things. Look, Samoa have been hugely disappointing. They have access. I know they don't have access to all the players they would like, but they've certainly got a half reasonably looking squad there. So I was a wee bit disappointed with them. Argentina were poor and didn't really contribute. So that England pool never really took off, did it? Which hasn't helped. So there are issues that we're going to end up with mismatches because there are only maybe eight teams. But I think. I think we've been a wee bit lacking, and Scotland didn't play particularly well either until their last game as well. So we haven't really seen the best of the setup. I thought that England's pool was, everyone probably thought England's pool was going to be the one that would go to the wire, but no. Nah.
It doesn't help when the game at the wire is called off, obviously. I know it had no material difference on who was actually going to progress, but still might have added a bit of spark. Two tier one nations as well, in New Zealand and Italy, going toe-to-toe might have given us something for 40-50 minutes, who knows? So that definitely, if you throw that into the mix, it doesn't help the perception.
No, it didn't, and it didn't help that Argentina had a red card early in the game against England, so it kind of felt a poor game against England, and then a non-game for England. You kind of feel like they haven't really been at this tournament yet, which again hasn't helped, and they're going to come straight into a classic, I suspect, on the weekend against Australia, so we'll find out how ready they are.
Just on an overall sense, before we get stuck into New Zealand against Ireland, I was just saying yesterday those four quarterfinals, I think, have a very defined favourite and a very defined underdog. If you were to pick one game where the underdog is most likely to cause an upset, it probably is England against Australia.
Yeah, I probably agree. Following New Zealand, we see Australia a lot. And they're hit and miss sometimes. They've got a coach that's erratic, which doesn't help them. But when they play, when they get it right, they're actually a really good team. Really good team. They put the All Blacks away majorly in Perth. Admittedly, the All Blacks were playing 14 men for half the game, but they were still clinical. Mm. And plenty of other teams probably could have still lost to the All Blacks at that stage, but they put them away. I think they're a good team. I think they've got good players. And if they can get their heads right, and if they can get some kind of parity physically with England, then I'm picking that you're right. I think Australia can win that game.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting post-match if there is some sort of controversial moment when you've got Cheka or Eddie Jones perhaps complaining about a referee. We've seen Cheka do a bit of it already in this tournament.
Never seen Michael complain about a referee. Like that in itself is a wee bit of an interesting matchup. There's a fair amount of personal history between those two, which does seem to affect their build-up. It does seem that Cheka lets that emotion of his background with Eddie get to him, and whether that translates into the team as a positive, as a negative, we haven't seen it as a positive too often when England have played Australia with Cheka coaching. But like it's a World Cup, this might be the one time it works for them.
Yeah, perhaps. Let's get into the one that we both care about the most this weekend. It is Ireland against the All Blacks on Saturday night in Tokyo Stadium. Can you make any case for the turnaround being more beneficial for Ireland and less beneficial for the All Blacks?
I don't really know if the turnaround is going to make any difference. What I do know is that you've got two really good teams that are pretty motivated to beat each other. I think the All Blacks will be ready to play, and my understanding about Ireland is that, you know, like if you can't get yourselves up, both teams, but if Ireland can't get up to play the defending champions in a quarterfinal to make the semi-final for the first time, then, you know, there's something going wrong then. I don't think it'll make any difference to Ireland that they played last week and that the All Blacks didn't. I just don't see it as being a relevant factor on the weekend.
Hmm. The All Blacks coaching team were saying as well that they were playing at a test level or perhaps even above a test level last Friday, and I was like, fair enough then, it's almost like playing a match the weekend before. But what I would say to counter that is that if somebody in that test match in training happens to, you know, put in a late hit or tackles high, they don't get a red card, they don't get suspended for a game. So if Bundy Aki had been going to test level standards in training last weekend with a game called after the typhoon, Ireland would by definition be in a better place this weekend.
I don't know as much about Irish rugby as you do, but I like the look of Gary Ringrose as a player. He's always impressed. He's looked pretty good at this World Cup. And the other one, Henshaw, he isn't too bad either. So I wouldn't get too... I don't think the All Blacks would be sitting there going, oh, no Bundy means that we've got some particular advantage in the midfield here. Like, Ireland are a good team, no matter who they put out there. So everyone's making a big, big deal about Bundy's red card, but look, Ireland will be putting out a midfield that will cause the All Blacks plenty of problems.
Yeah. Where are Ireland going to target when it comes to the All Blacks? Because it seems to be when the All Blacks have the ball and they come up against the Andy Farrell defence, that's almost a cliche of the week now, that's when they tend to struggle.
Well, it's where they have struggled.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that, and there's no doubt that that's why they've had to go back a wee bit. We saw them regress a wee bit when they played Ireland in November last year, and part of that problem was that they were trying to rebuild their attack game and try a new structure, new patterns. Don't ask me to explain them because I'm nowhere near technical enough to understand what they've been doing, but you know, the rush defence became kryptonite against the All Blacks. They found it very difficult in 2017 against the Lions, and then against South Africa and Ireland and England last year they struggled. So they've been working their way towards a different structure of attacking the game, and they've got a whole series of ploys up their sleeves. We saw them deal pretty effectively with South Africa, who came at them hard with line speed, and they were able to cope quite well. They found space, they probed, they kicked well. So look, I think that we've seen a revolution within the All Blacks, which has been caused by Andy Farrell. If that gives them any kind of sense of pride, I don't know, it probably should. But that's why the All Blacks have been pretty keen about this game, because it's going to be the ultimate test to see if they have actually worked out the answers to the questions that Ireland kept posing them.
Yeah, so it's fair to say that perhaps the Lions over 2 years ago, maybe November last year against the Farrell defence, but also perhaps the bad experiences against the Springboks in this year's Rugby Championship, perhaps those are the three key moments that the All Blacks have needed almost before this World Cup?
And England. England defended pretty well against them. But the All Blacks are an attacking team.
Yeah.
They don't tend to win games. I mean, they do defend well. They do everything well. But they are an attacking team. They're set up to score tries. It's their natural default mode to use the ball. So if you encounter a team like Ireland, who are very good at saying, right, we know what the All Blacks are going to do. They're going to use the ball. Let's stop them from doing that. Then it does create obvious problems. And, you know, when your whole game is based on doing that, if you find teams like Ireland and South Africa that have been really good at stopping them from doing it, then you do have a moment of thinking, right, how do we work our way around this problem? Because our game is not being allowed to flourish in any way at this stage. So, yeah, look, it's tribute to the skill and expertise of those teams and the way that they've played that has forced the All Blacks to come to this World Cup with a completely... Well, their personnel's changed quite dramatically, too, and with the dual playmaking idea of Mwanga and Barrett together. So everything's changed for them, and, you know, Ireland have been, and Andy Farrell have been a big factor in driving that.
Whose idea was that, the dual playmaking thing? Was it Hansen? Was it Foster? Was it perhaps Barrett even having a say in it?
It's nothing new. I mean, I think if you go back to the last World Cup, they actually moved down the same road at times. They didn't commit to it fully, but they quite often used Barrett off the bench at fullback, Carter at first five. They also had Colin Slade in that team, who was often on the bench as well, who come in and do the same thing. And look, it didn't just happen this year either. You remember in Ireland, Damian McKenzie played. Yeah. He's a natural number 10 who, you know, has actually probably evolved into a better fullback. But again, he's a decision maker. He's a playmaker with a lot of experience at 10, and they were using him at fullback on that Northern tour. So there's nothing new. All that happened was McKenzie got injured in April. So it made them think, well, we want to stick with the dual playmaker idea, which they do. And they do because we go back to that rush defense. They think it creates more opportunity to get around it. Then their options were, well, we've got two guys that can do it, and one of them's pretty good at fullback, so we're going to have to move him from number 10, and he's going to have to go. I mean, I think if you follow the All Blacks, it's fairly common sense how they ended up there rather than a kind of inspired moment. Sure. It's been heading in that direction for quite a while.
In terms of the overall philosophy then, I mean, you kind of think about the great coaching minds that are in that All Blacks backroom team, but also the great personalities that they have. Has there ever been a sense that they've been at loggerheads over a couple of challenging times over the last 4 years? Now, granted, I'm using the word challenging in an All Black sense. If anybody else is going through those challenges, it's pretty good 4 years.
I think the whole culture is built on challenges. I mean, it doesn't work if one guy dictates terms and says, this is what we're going to do, and no one's brave enough to stand up and say, well, that was like a great idea. So you don't know necessarily what goes on behind the closed doors of selection meetings or training grounds, but there's no doubt that that Ian Foster has been given a license to say what he thinks, as of all the coaching staff, but he would be sort of highest up the pecking order, I guess. And look, I think that they've arrived at this place through robust debate, him and Hansen. I don't think they've always agreed about the players that they're going to pick. I mean, I think they've always agreed about the style of rugby they want to play, but who are the best players to achieve that style has probably been a matter of quite fierce debate. I mean, you see it on the wings on Saturday. We're probably going to see Sevu Reese, who's 22, I don't know how many games he's played, 4, 5, and George Bridge, similar, who've ousted a guy with 70-odd test caps and Ben Smith and Rico Ioane, who a year ago we were all saying was the greatest wing on earth. Right. They managed to, they've made that transition on the eve of a World Cup, and I don't think that would have just happened on a whim. I think, you know, that would have taken quite a bit of robust debate to go down that road, because you're giving up a lot of experience at a World Cup, which is high risk.
Do we have any idea which of the coaches is pro-Bridge, pro-Reese, and which ones were arguing against them?
I don't know how that would have worked out in the end. I think if you're the head coach, you're probably always going to be a wee bit drawn to experience, would be my guess. And to leave Ben Smith out your starting team, I think probably you're going to need to be convinced by someone else to do that. So I suspect that Foster has driven the desire or the campaign, if you like, to bring in these two younger guys.
We were just talking there about Hansen and Foster, and I guess how that conflict has almost been necessary for the greater good of the All Blacks.
Well, I think so. The hard thing about picking the All Blacks is they've probably got, and I'm sure every coach would probably say they've got the same depth of quality, maybe some teams do, but with the All Blacks, you really do have, in some positions, your three, your four, your five players deep, and they all come come with different kind of abilities. So it's never an easy conversation to work out. You could pick three All Black teams and they look entirely different to one another. So, you know, everyone says that any monkey could come and coach the All Blacks. Well, maybe they could, but selecting the All Blacks might be a different challenge, making sure you get the right players on the field. And that's something that Hansen and Foster, I think, have done particularly well in their 8 years together. There's not often been a team where you've gone, really? I mean, none of that. And they sort of tend to be quite inspired at how they, you know, they threw Rico Ioane in against the Lions, and everyone, no one thought that was going to happen. You know, world superstar by the end of the year. The you know, Goodhue has come into the team and been superb for them. Really good player. Wasn't sure whether he was ready, but he's done it. And, you know, switching Ardie Savia to blindside has been another clever ploy that they've come up with.
Yeah, it seems to have all worked out pretty well. In terms of team selection tomorrow, are we expecting any curveballs?
Nah, not really. I think you'd be a wee bit disappointed after 4 years if you didn't know at this point who you wanted in your team, or you were trying to be clever. I think you'd only be fooling yourself at that stage. So depends on how much you know about the All Blacks, but we're pretty certain there won't be anything in there that will surprise us.
What's your view been on Ireland during this World Cup?
Maybe a wee bit disappointing, given how well I watched them play in Dublin to beat the All Blacks. I don't know if they've regressed per se, but they certainly didn't look the same vibrant team when they lost to Japan. I don't know whether they just got caught out, didn't take Japan as seriously as they needed to. I don't know whether the heat affected them. But I'd be a wee bit wary that they, you know, to me, they were playing a style of rugby in November last year that looked really capable of winning big games. I'm beginning to wonder whether the way Japan are playing, the way the All Blacks are playing, whether Ireland's game plan has enough elements to it, whether they can attack well enough, you know, without, you know, they need to be on the front foot, don't they? They need to win that physical exchange, and they need the ball going through Sexton all the time and Murray to be kicking all the time for that to work for them. And I don't know whether on the hard grounds here in Japan and the speed that the All Blacks in Japan are trying to play at, whether Ireland have got quite enough weaponry behind them, but they might do, because they've proven in the past that style has worked.
Yeah, because it's almost bizarre looking back on it now in 2018 that they did just have that one style of play. They just executed it so well that people couldn't really kind of counteract it almost. Like, there has been analysis of teams done as for forever in rugby. Like, it's just hard to understand why that analysis of Ireland has just got better this year. Is it just more of a volume of work? Is it just because they beat the All Blacks and suddenly some people think they're the best team in the world for a while?
I think it's cyclical as well, though, isn't it? That you go through periods where defensive teams get on top because they spend more time working on their defence. And what Ireland did, I thought, probably throughout 2018, I didn't see enough of them, but certainly in November, they played that particular type of game to the end degree. You know, the intensity of their defence that day was just phenomenal. I mean, they were, I don't know if they missed a tackle. I mean, I don't think I've seen a player play as well as Peter O'Mahony did that day in terms of covering ground and doing the impossible. He was everywhere. They just tackled, and, you know, they took Farrell's game defensive game plan and Schmidt's philosophy to the nth degree, didn't they? And when they do it at that level, they were almost impossible to play against. Whether they've been able to get back up to that level, you know far better than I have, but it's probably quite a hard thing to maintain. Maybe that's what we've seen. They just haven't reached that same ability to be as intense as they were that day.
Is there a more important player in terms of what he brings to a team on a singular level than Jonathan Sexton at the moment? Because it's been Jekyll and Hyde, the Irish performances with him without him in this tournament in particular.
Well, you would know more than I would, but if he'd played against Japan, which I'm thinking that he didn't, before I make a horrible mistake, would they have lost, would be the question I would ask. And I don't know if the answer is yes or no, but I certainly think they would have played better with him in the team. So I think the All Blacks are pretty aware that everything goes through him. You know, and he is a world-class player. I've seen this guy a few times, and I remember in whatever year I felt he missed a penalty. It might have been 2013. He had a chance to put the All Blacks away in that game 15 minutes before the end, and he missed it. And I thought, he's not quite ready yet. He doesn't quite believe in himself as a world-class talent yet. He's looked at history, and it's weighed on his shoulders, and he's not there yet. And then Chicago 2016, I watched him and thought, now you're there now.
Yeah.
Because the key thing in that game was that when the All Blacks came back at them and came back at them and came back at them, Ireland didn't stop playing. They carried on playing. And Sexton was the guy leading it. He refused to stop playing rugby. He said, no, we'll keep attacking them. And I thought, yeah, this guy's a real deal. And he made everything happen for them. And I think at that point, he's been their key playmaker ever since. And he's a phenomenal player, but I guess the danger for Ireland is if the All Blacks know that and they'll be coming for him and they'll have a few ploys, I think, to keep him quiet.
What sort of ploys?
I think we'll try to tackle them. Hopefully a bit lower than I don't know what they're going to do, but they're clearly, I mean, Matt Todd talked about it the other day, didn't he? He's a number seven. You know, any playmaker with that ability, you've got to shut down space and give them no time to play. So there's your answer. That's what they're going to do.
Yeah, it's pretty obvious. Like, prediction wise, is it going to be a game where the All Blacks look to hammer Ireland early, build up a big lead, and then crush them as time goes by, or how do you see this happening?
Well, I think if you ask Steve Ansland, yeah, that would be the plan.
Yeah.
Oh, can they do it? That's a completely different question. I think the All Blacks will want to start with a ruthlessness. They've got a bit of a bad habit of taking too long to get into games and, you know, being a bit reactive rather than proactive. They'll want to get on the front foot early. They'll want to be really physical with the Irish pack and show them that they've turned up and not let Ireland get going forward. They'll be aggressive. And like, I think they want to score points early, because the danger of playing the All Blacks is if you let them score early and let them get a lead and they've got a bit of confidence in what's happening on the scoreboard, they can let rip and they'll start making passes that stick and they get going and you're in real trouble. And they know that. They know they're a very difficult team to beat if they build an early lead. So, yeah. Absolutely, that will be their plan. But yeah, having a plan and being able to do it, clearly not the same thing.
So what's your prediction then? All Blacks by how many?
I don't even know. Look, I think the All Blacks probably will win, because I think they, at the moment, they've got a bit of confidence. They've got so much weaponry. And I think, although I'm not convinced, but I think they've worked out a few better attacking. But I think they're attacking better than they did in November last year. And I think they've embedded that Mwanga-Barrett combination. I think we'll see Leonard Brown and Goodhue in the midfield. And that's got a fair bit of ball playing ability. And the two wings are pretty special at the moment. Reece in particular can just about make anything happen. So I think with that in mind, they'll probably win the game. I'm hopeless at predicting, though. Look, it could be by 1 point, but potentially if they get a bit of an early lead, it could be by 10 or more.
Mm. Well, Gregor, it's been two different locations, one interview. Thank you very much for joining me this afternoon.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of Us. Everyone in.
That was an Off the Ball Podcast Network presentation.